Hello and welcome to the Book Launch Show. I'm your host, Tim Grawl, and I have been working with authors to help them build their platforms and launch best-selling books for over 8 years. I've launched dozens of best-selling books. They've gone as high as number one on the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and Washington Post bestseller list. I've worked with authors just getting their first books off the ground and out into the world. I've created this show to share the strategies and tactics I've learned along the way. In this episode, we are continuing the conversation with Michael Bungay Stanier about his book, The Coaching Habit. This is the second episode in this series. If you are just joining us, I highly recommend you go back and start with the first one before you jump into this one. So again, I'm having Michael on. He's been a friend for a long time. I really respect the way he approaches everything he does. It's always with thoughtfulness and thoroughness and thinking of things in an overall bigger picture. And so I love his take on this. In this episode, we are going to talk about distribution, how he went about getting his book out into the world, the investment it took to self-publish the way he did it, and also start getting into his overall long-term marketing plan, how he uses Amazon reviews, and so on. So we get into the marketing on this and getting the book out into the world. So it's a really fun episode. Like I said in the last episode, I highly recommend you go and pick up a copy of his book, The Coaching Habit. He writes great books. You'll thoroughly enjoy it. If you know anybody that would enjoy a copy, buy a copy for them as well, just as a thanks for him coming on the show and sharing his knowledge. Okay, let's jump in and get started. One thing that you talked about was distribution. And this is one of the things I've gotten hung up on a lot, because it's like most of my marketing is online. Most of what I'm doing is online. I'm not doing a lot of traveling and pushing the book. And yet you went out of your way to do distribution, which I think is probably the biggest thing that publishers kind of, they already have those trenches, they already have the distribution, they have everything set up to like sell your worldwide rights and your audio rights and all that kind of stuff. And so looking at self-publishing, that's the hardest part to recreate, but it seemed like a really big part of what you wanted to do. So what were you thinking as far as like, why go through all that effort to build your own distribution channels? Why go through all that effort?
So two things were part of this. The first is traditional publishers have a vested interest in not making the distribution process particularly clear to anybody, because it's something that they actually manage and control. It's a place they add value. And if you figure it out, they can't add value anymore. But we started working with a company based out in Vancouver called Page Two Strategies. And these are two people who have spent their life working in publishing, Trina and Jesse. And they're kind of like, we work with authors who want to self-publish but want to do it professionally. They typically work with people who've got at least a book underneath their belt, but it depends. And they're like, we know distribution. We can sort that for you. So they immediately made it easy for me to tackle this, because honestly, Tim, if it had been just me, I'd have gone, I'm confused. I don't even know how to make a good decision here. I don't know what good advice is.
I don't even really understand what distribution is. Like, to me, it's like, I guess it's getting it out into bookstores, but the odds of like your book getting carried in like my Barnes and Noble, like, and that's not even helpful to you. So when you're thinking distribution, what are you thinking?
What I'm thinking is, how do I get my book into an airport? Because I'm trying to find vice presidents of HR and vice presidents of learning, and a bunch of them spend time hanging out in airports going, what's the latest business book? So I'm like, I've got a business need for this. So how do I get it into an airport? And how do I find the distributors who will champion the book getting into the airport?
Okay. And have you found any other benefits of distribution? Like, what other things have you done for distribution? And besides getting it into airport bookstores, were there any like surprising things that like you found as you went on that journey?
Well, part of it is I spend a lot of time trying to notice what other people are doing and how do they get there. So I go, Patrick Lencioni, God damn it. He's like still 8 books in the New York Times top 10. And how does he do that? And it's in part because he writes compelling books, and partly because he's got an influential agent, and partly because he's got a track record now of selling 1 million books. But you look at, I know that Patrick Lencioni has distribution in airports tied up for the next 2 years, and not just on the table, that's what I've got. He's got that little block of books So it's either Malcolm Gladwell or Patrick Lencioni has booked that out. And he spends, it's a six-figure amount to buy that for a year. But it's totally worth it because it's such a strong builder of a brand for him. Same with John Maxwell. You know, every time you go into a bookstore, you're like, John Maxwell, you're in every bookstore ever. And eight of your books are here. What? How do you do that? And the answer is they work really hard to get that placement because it really matters to them. I'm less fussed about placement in bookstores just because there's fewer of them. And to your point, in some ways, bookstores are a terrible place to sell a book because it's now you competing against the 9,000 other business books that came out in the last 3 days. So that's the key thing for me, is just doing that. It also meant that because we struck a deal with Greenleaf, who are one of the big US distributors, they handle our foreign rights process. Because again, I'm like, I don't know how to negotiate foreign rights. But whenever we get an inquiry, we pass it on to them and they negotiate it for us. So that's just helpful to have that in the hands of good people.
So one of the things you talk about is your investment in upfront, right? Because the whole thing, if you go with a publisher, the theory is you'll get an advance, and there's a huge range that you'll get. If you're a first time or smaller author, it's probably $50,000 or less. You said you got 15 for your first one, 15,000.
Which felt amazing, by the way. I was stoked to get 15 grand for that first book. I was like, yay.
But then when you self-published this latest book, you spent, was it 12,000 you spent?
I spent more than that.
Okay.
You know, if you add up, it depends what you add up and when you start adding it. But, you know, I paid for an editor. I paid for a copy editor. I paid for the page two people to help us manage distribution. I paid for distribution. So it costs you money to build relationships with Greenleaf and Georgetown around that. I paid for the print runs, right? Because this is my thing. So I'm paying up front to get books printed and sent out there. So it's probably, when you add it up, it's sort of in the 20,000 or 30,000 range, I'm guessing. So a lot of money. However, I know that because my business is successful, I had that money that I could spend and go, this is a marketing investment for my business. And secondly, it costs somewhere in the region of $8,000 to $12,000 to buy one of our programs. So in the context of selling three programs, this is a small investment. I know that's not true for lots of people listening in. So then you go, well, what's my budget? And what are the things that do I really go for? And what things don't I go for? Whatever it's worth, my advice is don't try and kind of do a little bit of investment in everything. Pick the three things that matter most and go, this is where I'm going to spend my money because this is where I think I'm going to get the best return.
And what would your advice be, those three things? Or like, what's the most important thing to spend money on? The next, like the top three?
Well, I think it depends on what you're trying to achieve with your book. So you've heard me say in this conversation, I didn't want this book to look like a self-published book because I'm trying to sell into big organizations and therefore I don't want to appear as an amateur. I want to appear as a professional. So it really mattered to me to have the design feel really great and to spend a little bit of extra money on the stock weight of the cover. Because if you pick up a self-publishing book, the covers feel a bit cheap and flimsy and light, right? You don't even realize it, but somehow there's a subliminal message. They did this on the cheap. And I'm like, we're paying for the next quality up of paper and cover stock. So it has a weight and a feel to it that really matter. Now, that matters to me. It may not matter to lots of people listening in because they're not trying to do the same thing with their book. But because I knew who I was trying to get this in the hands of, that look and feel really mattered to me. And then the second most important investment was the page two consultancy, because they just negotiated and managed a whole bunch of the logistics that honestly, I would have in the end gone, it's too hard. I'm bored. I hate details. And they just kind of went, we're going to do the research for you and we're going to come back and we're going to give you, choose one of these three things. And I'd go, oh, this one. And they're like, good, we'll make it happen. So that investment mattered.
One of the surprising things I found self-publishing is the amount of unknown unknowns, right? Like what was so funny, this is my favorite example, is when I got my first art copy or whatever, I was looking at it and it looked good. I was looking at it, and then I like glanced over at my bookshelf, and I realized that the copy on the spine was faced the wrong way.
Right.
And it's because my designer was doing great design, but didn't know book design. And so just put it the wrong way. And I'm like, my immediate thought was, what else have we missed? You know, like, and so having people like that makes a big difference. And that, I guess my next question was going to be, why did you do your own print runs instead of print on demand? And was it for that quality sake?
Yeah, it was a quality management piece. And secondly, it was cheaper. And also we have our distribution going out through Georgetown in Canada and Greenleaf in the US. But because this book is the collateral for all the programs, it's also part of what we send out into the world as well. So it just made sense for us on a quality and cost basis, because we knew we were going to shipping at least 10,000 books a year, for us to set that up.
Okay, so I want to move into the marketing part. So you list out in the article lots of different things that you did for the marketing. I just want to hit on a couple things that I have some questions about. So the first thing you said, and I'm going to ask this question because it goes against like my advice, so it hurt my feelings a little bit. Though you said people who set a target number of books they're going to sell don't know what they're talking about. So talk a little bit about, and that's in the define success. And I always say, you know, every person's success, they have to define it on their own. So talk a little bit about how you went into this as far as like, okay, we're going to launch this book. And how do you know when it's been successful?
So for some people, setting a target number of books could be the perfect thing to do, because it's like, I'm going to get that number if it kills me. And they're like, just like you did, like when you did your piece where you're like, I've written a book called Launch 1,000, Sell 1,000 Copies of Your Book. I better figure out how to sell 1,000 copies of my book by this date. Right. And I remember you're like, you're 2 weeks out and you're 250 books short or some number like that.
Well, that was when I was trying to do the 10,000 in a year.
10,000 in a year, right.
Yeah, yeah.
So what was it? Like you're 6 weeks out and you're like, I've got to hit 10,000 and I'm 2,000 short.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And like having that time and that target kind of focused you. And you're like, okay, I'm going to swallow my pride and I'm going to beg people to buy my book.
That's right.
But I haven't done that yet. So I'm just going to beg. And you're like, boom, you hit that target and you cross the line. So fantastic. A great example of setting a target that works. But I had a couple of things that were different. The first is the purpose of this book was to help me sell training programs. That was the business reason for this book. So setting a number, and I'd like, okay, so I have four books before. One book has sold maybe 2,500 copies. One book has sold 20,000 copies. One book has sold 80,000 copies. One book, I don't even know how many copies I've sold. And I have no idea why. I was like, I'm going to sell 10,000. And I'm like, well, that doesn't sound enough. I'm going to sell 50,000. I'm like, wow, that sounds a lot. Can I do that in a year? I don't know. Maybe I'm going to sell 100,000. I'm like, I'm just making this up. I don't know how many I'm going to sell. So first of all, I was like, actually, the number of books I sell is less important. Because if I sold 100 books, but I sold them all to 100 people who each spent $1 million on training in my program, it would have been a stunning success. The second thing is, and this is a life thing, which is you can't control your outcome. You can only control the process. So in general, setting a goal is fine, but where you want to invest is in the process, which is, am I doing all I can? Am I fully committed? Am I showing up at a 10 out of 10? Am I leaving it all on the carpet? Am I just being courageous about what we do? If we've chosen a marketing strategy, am I going all in on that? And those are the questions and measurements that I'm setting myself, which is, I want to get to the end of the process and go, I couldn't have done any better than I just tried. And that's not to say it had to all work. I just wanted to say I'd given it my very best shot. And if I succeeded, great. And if I didn't succeed, I'd be like, this is a really noble failure. So that's how I framed it.
So one of my favorite parts is when you talk about playing the long game and committing to a year. And this is where I struggle between what people pay me to do and what I really think people should actually do. Because I get hired to come in and launch a book and make everything happen in this tiny little window of time so that we can hit the Wall Street Journal, New York Times bestseller list, which I have very little control over, but that's a whole nother thing, where you talked about like the long game and committing to a year. And it reminded me of an interview I did with Dan Pink years ago. And he's like, when I come out with a new book, I have committed 2 years of my life to this project, the next 2 years, not, you know, writing it, like once it's out, 2 years.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about your mindset coming into the launch, because you did end up hitting a Wall Street Journal bestseller list completely by accident. Yeah. Which is the right way to hit it, is what I want to say. But just talk about your mindset coming into both the launch, which I would say is anything up until the release day to like a week or two after, and then your mindset moving into the year following.
Yeah. So the seed for this got planted by talking to David Allen, who's the guy who wrote Getting Things Done, so a kind of classic in the productivity field. And we got connected through one of my shameless moves. It actually connected to the very first book I put out. It's called Get Unstuck and Get Going on the Stuff That Matters. And after I created it, I was like, okay, I hadn't done any marketing planning around this at all. I said, what would I do to try and market this book and sell it? And I'm like, I'd call up a famous person for a testimonial. So when I looked at my bookshelf, David Allen's book was there first because alphabetically organized books at the time. So I find this phone number and I go, okay, here's the phone number for Getting Things Done. And I call it. And on the first ring, David Allen picks up and says, hi, I'm David Allen. I was like, oh man, I'm totally unprepared for this conversation. I haven't figured out a pitch. I just kind of did my spontaneous make a phone call thing. And so I asked if I could send him a copy of my book. He said, yes. I sent it. He wrote a really nice blurb for it. And we kind of connected after that and had dinner a few times and the like. And over dinner, he told me that Getting Things Done, the book that he'd taken like 4 years to write because he'd written two really sucky versions of it and had to abandon it entirely and rewrite it, sold more year on year. So year two sold more than year one. Year three, then I don't know if that's still true, but 10 years ago or so when this happened, I was like, what a good out goal for a book, which is it sells more year on year. And the way I frame that as a goal for myself is that I wanted this book, The Coaching Habit, to become a coaching classic. Just like Getting Things Done as a productivity classic, I wanted The Coaching Habit to be considered a classic. And I don't even really know what that means, Tim. It's like one of those words.
Yeah, well, like a buddy of mine, I said, well, what do you want out of your writing? He's like, I want people to be reading my books in 100 years. I'm like, well, that's a weird thing to shoot. Like, how do you even control that? So yeah, classic is like that.
Yeah. I'm like, if I can have this book still being relevant in 10 or 20 years, I'd be pretty thrilled by that. One of the metrics that I could look at is when I look at the books I considered classics, they all had 1,000 or more reviews on Amazon. So I've been really, you'll see this in the Growth Lab article, I asked people to write a review on Amazon.com. So that's what I'm subliminally doing to everybody listening right now. If you get a copy of The Coaching Habit, a review on Amazon would be really gratefully received. So it ties in with everything you read where you're like, I was a New York Times bestseller, oh, but it didn't really change my life. Oh, I was on Oprah, oh, but it didn't really change my life. And then you think about that quote that I think Gretchen Rubin says, that I think she's quoting somebody else, which is, what you do with your days is what you do with your life. So if this book really matters to you, it's like better to do action day to day to day to day to keep this out in the world and to get over the fact that by the time your book launches, you hate your book because you're like, I wrote 9 versions of it. Then they forced me to read what the copy editor did, which is I read it word by comma by word by comma. Honestly, by the time you get a book out in the world, you can almost not bear to open the pages because you've seen it so many times. Everything you have written looks terrible and banal and predictable and pointless. And then you've got to go, this is to Dan Pink's point, right? I'm going to spend 2 years saying the same thing about my book. Because like Dan Pink is like drive. It's like you need motivation, you need autonomy, you need purpose. And then in his next speech, he goes, you need motivation, you need autonomy, you need purpose. And then in his next podcast interview, he goes, you need motivation, you need autonomy, you need purpose. That's all he did for 2 years.
And every time it sounds like the first time he said it, he's so excited.
Right. And so I've done something similar with The Coaching Habit. After a year and a half, You know, there's not many questions that I haven't been asked at least 10 times about this book. And I'm like, you know what? I love this book and I think it matters. And even if I'm getting a bit bored of my own answers, nobody who's listening is bored yet, or almost nobody. So I'm going to just show up and I'm going to go, this is why you need to whatever.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Launch Show. For all the past episodes, the show notes, including the Growth Lab article that is required reading for these episodes with Michael Bungay Stanier, or to connect with me, you can do that by going to booklaunchshow.com. I have dozens of free book marketing resources and articles that you can access at my website, booklaunch.com. Lastly, if you would like to support the show, you can do that by telling another author about the show and by visiting us on iTunes and leaving a rating and review. Thanks for subscribing and being a part of our work here at booklaunch.com.